of America on Friday, July 4th, 2014. And as usual, we'd like to thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande. Here are our top stories this evening. Transparency International Zimbabwe has released a report that reveals shocking levels of corruption in Zimbabwe, caused mostly by lack of transparency in land distribution.
There seem to be officials, both from bureaucratic officials and political officials, with monopoly and discretion over this land. And there seem to be some incentives in delaying the process of issuing out land to people.
The Zimbabweans in South Africa will have to return home eventually to process their work permits, following fears by Pretoria that their continued stay in the country will result in unintended social and economic consequences.
My main worry would have been if he said, at some point we will wholesale send the 250,000 Zimbabweans back home.
And some Harare residents urge Zimbabwe to urgently address the deteriorating economic situation in the country, saying life is increasingly becoming difficult for them. Transparency International Zimbabwe has released a report that reveals the shocking levels of corruption in the country, caused mostly by lack of transparency in land distribution. The report is titled "An Analysis of Transparency and Accountability in Land Sector Governance in Zimbabwe." The corruption watchdog says land administration in Zimbabwe is problematic owing to the involvement of many institutions with mandates that overlap, sometimes complement and often contradict each other because of court varying policy statements emerging from them. The group listed seven institutions that deal with the land issue and argued that lack of centrality has bred corruption. The group said male nepotism has shut out women and youth in benefiting from the land. Transparency International researcher and coordinator Farai Mutondoro tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that their research was thorough and involved meetings with officials.
When we did this study, collected research, we collected data using a qualitative research approach. But the first thing that we did was to make sure that we do a consultative workshop. So we conducted a consultative workshop consulting government members, people from the private sector and communities. Then the second stage was now the collection of data. So we collected data from different areas in Zimbabwe, Mashingo, Mutare, went to Lawayo, went to different areas, that's urban and rural. So we're collecting data mainly using a questionnaire, focus group discussions, interviews and reviewing secondary data on the literature that currently does exist on this subject. Basically, that's how we collected information, but due to the nature of the research and the phenomena that we're studying, the study was largely quantitative in nature, so it relied on qualitative research tools.
We see that your report is revealing that there is a lot of corruption that is going on when it comes to issues to do with the land. What is happening?
As you might be aware, land is a very sensitive and a very important resource in Zimbabwe. So when you look at urban land administration, for instance, there is a high demand for land. People want land, housing stands, for instance. So there seem to be officials, both from bureaucratic officials and political officials, with monopoly and discretion over this land. And there seem to be some incentives in delaying the process of issuing out land to people. Thereby, there are corruption opportunities which are found in land administration. So the issue is about the importance of land. And if you look at it, it's pressure resulting from the process of urbanization, process of increased pressure on land, and the process of some people finding rent-seeking opportunities in land administration. Then if you look at it from a rural background or from a communal perspective, it's an issue about traditional leaders or the community leaders seeing incentive in parceling out land due to political party orientation.
That was Transparency International researcher and coordinator Farai Mutondoro speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Australia. Zimbabweans in South Africa will have to return home eventually to process their work permits following fears by Pretoria that their continued stay in the country will result in unintended social and economic consequences. Responding to a question on South African Broadcasting Corporation's morning live program on whether Zimbabweans will be sent home upon the expiry of their permits, Home Affairs Minister Malusi Gigaba said Zimbabweans will definitely be sent home, but not this year. Zimbabweans living in South Africa say they have been in the dark after Pretoria announced that they would have to return home to renew any permits granted during the special dispensation project introduced 4 years ago. Reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke to Paul Chimoswa, president of the Zimbabwe Migrants International. He is glad South Africa has at least responded to the issue.
We have to acknowledge the fact that this was a special dispensation. Right from the beginning, these special dispensation permits were limited to 4 years. Clearly, they were trying to avoid a conflict with other laws that provide for almost a semi-automatic right that after 5 years, you do qualify to apply either for citizenship or for permanent residence. So there was some logic in which they reserved a right for themselves that these permits were limited to 4 years. Now, having said that, you also look at the fact that what are the reasons why people are here in South Africa? Some are here as economic refugees. Some are here because of the political turmoil we've been experiencing in Zimbabwe. Some are here specifically just because they are highly qualified individuals who market their skills anywhere else where they are rewarded better. So I think the minister is correct when he says maybe the political situation in Zimbabwe may improve and Zimbabweans may eventually want to go back to Zim. And there are many of them like that. My main worry would have been if he said, at some point, we will wholesale send the 250,000 Zimbabweans back home.
Do you hope to seek audience with the minister to better work out this situation?
You know, Zimbabwe Migrants International is a very new organization, and I think that has to be pointed out. We are still putting our structures and everything in place. Some of us, we don't even fall under the special dispensation permit. We fall under other statutes. But it is just for the feeling that the discourse about Zimbabweans has been at a very low level. And it's about time that we actually jack up the discussion about the conditions of the Zimbabwean migrant.
That was Paul Chimoswa, president of the Zimbabwe Migrants International, speaking with Studio 7 from Johannesburg, South Africa. Some Harare residents have urged President Robert Mugabe's government to urgently address the deteriorating economic situation in the country, saying life is increasingly becoming difficult for them. Our correspondent Thomas Chiripasi speaks with members of the public in Zimbabwe's capital city.
Several Harare inhabitants, such as Atua Uchibaya, say the prevailing economic situation in the country is having a negative effect on their families.
Things are difficult at the moment. We are really struggling. It's different from the past phase of the inclusive government. Now you can't get money easily.
Another Harare resident, Jeremiah Dongo, who resides in Mabvuku high-density suburb, concurs. Dongo says the shortage of jobs is also contributing to his failure to raise his family.
As you know, we've got a liquidity crunch in the country, and access to money is a big challenge for most of us. We have seen a lot of small income projects here and there where you need to sustain yourselves. Companies are closing, no jobs in the country, and this is a very big challenge. Unfortunately, what we've seen, maybe soon after the July 31 elections, there was hope probably from the Zim Asset document, but it has remained a document. We haven't seen anything material or anything materializing from that document.
Dongo says authorities should come up with policies that encourage foreign direct investment, leading to the creation of jobs in the country.
Firstly, I think the Zimbabwe Investment Authority should be able to identify key companies that can resuscitate the economy, especially on the manufacturing side, where they can target at least a very few companies and provide, it could be through the minerals that I've mentioned before, where they could provide capital injection for such companies, and also try to open up doors from investors outside the country.
In his election campaign, President Mugabe's ZANU-PF party promised to create more than 2 million jobs. Local inhabitant Tandiwe Gamanya, who lives in the Avenues area of Harare, says corruption must be nipped in the bud if all government efforts to revive the country's economy are to bear fruit.
If the government is really serious about improving the country's economy, they should first tackle corruption head on, because we cannot have people in high positions earning absorbent salaries at the expense of everyone. So government should first correct the corruption issue in the country, and then I'm sure we're headed in the right direction.
Those with higher profiles are not spared either by the economic meltdown. Former Mbare legislator Pinia Odenga says most former legislators are failing to take their children to school owing to the economic hardships. Denga says some of his colleagues have resorted to vending to earn a living, adding that their plight is being exacerbated by the government's failure to pay former MPs their outstanding allowances.
Some are vending. Some other time you would hear one of former members of parliament has been arrested for vending, which doesn't augur well even with the society, even, you know, the worldwide, stature of a former member of parliament. Some had gone into agriculture, like myself. I harvested about 21 tons. I sent the mess to GMB, and GMB was saying, you know, in a week's time they will be paying back those who have, you know, delivered their mess to GMB. But now it's more than 3 weeks. I haven't been paid.
Clerk of Parliament Austin Zoma referred all questions to Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa, whose mobile phone was not reachable. However, Chinamasa told a news conference yesterday that government was doing all it can to secure fresh lines of credit to finance the country's productive sectors of the economy. But international money lending institutions such as the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund are insisting that Harare should first clear its arrears, almost reaching the $10 billion mark, before securing new lines of credit. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
The MDCT National Executive today met in Harare and officially opened the stage for candidates who want to contest at its October Congress to start canvassing for support. All positions are up for grabs, including that of party leader Morgan Tsvangirai, says spokesman Douglas Monzora.
In terms of our constitution, any position is electable at Congress, and anybody who wants any position can contest for that position. That includes the position of president. So if there's anybody interested, they can start campaigning now, because we have now opened the campaign, and they can campaign for any position without any reprisals. This is now in terms of our constitution. But what will happen is that there will be nominations for the provinces. They'll be nominated by districts. For national executives, they will be nominated by provinces. And we have got 12 provinces of the MDC. So you can get if you get one nomination out of 12, you are still allowed to contest, because all we need is for you to get a nomination. So ours is a direct democracy. We have no holy cow. Our president is very ready. He has himself said, if anybody wants to challenge me, let's do it on the political turf. As brothers and as sisters. So we have not yet known any names, because right now the nominations have not come. So it is a very, very interesting development now. We also discussed that we are going to start with congresses at a branch level, ward level, sometime in July, and then districts and provinces, August, September, and then the main congress will be held.
That was MDCT spokesman Douglas Monzora speaking on the line with Studio 7.
I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye. Don't miss my weekly women's forum. My guest this Saturday.
My name is Pastor Julian Maramba. I was one of the marketing persons for Women of Dominion in Dallas, Texas. They've also got a ministry called Healing the Heart Ministries, where I also talk about women, empowerment, marriages, because I've been there. I've been in a marriage. We reconciled after almost about 5 years fighting. So please tune in and be blessed.
Don't miss it.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up, media panel blows up $1.6 million causing headaches for Information Minister Jonathan Moyo. We will tell you who's causing the headache for Mr. Moyo. Just stay tuned. But first, we take a look at regional and international news. A former British tabloid editor who went on to become the spokesman for Prime Minister David Cameron has been sentenced to 18 months in jail for conducting an extensive phone hacking operation in pursuit of sensational stories. Andy Coulson was convicted last week of participating in a conspiracy to listen in on private voicemail messages, was handed his sentence today in London. And Israeli police clashed with Palestinian protesters in East Jerusalem on Friday as thousands of people gathered to mourn the Palestinian teenager killed in a suspected revenge attack that has prompted 2 days of angry protests. Israeli police had increased security in anticipation of more demonstrations following the funeral of Mohammed Abu Kubadai.
Beautiful, far heroes proved.
Across the United States today, Americans celebrate the 230th anniversary of their country's independence from Britain with parades, picnics, fireworks, rodeos, and concerts. The 4th of July festivities in Washington include reenactors portraying historical figures including Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, and John Adams, who will read the Declaration of Independence. There'll be a concert and fireworks on the National Mall tonight. The concert will feature Frankie Valli, Patti LaBelle, Michael McDonald, The Muppets, and the National Symphony Orchestra. In his weekly address to the nation released by the White House early today, President Barack Obama traced the history of the country back to the nation's founding fathers, the farmers and businessmen, doctors and lawyers, ministers and kite-flying scientists, Benjamin Franklin, who approved the new nation's Declaration of Independence on July 4, 1776. Then, as now, the president said, the nation's leaders came from diverse backgrounds.
They were united by a belief in a simple truth, that we are all created equal, that we are all endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these rights are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Over the years, that belief has sustained us through war and depression, peace and prosperity. It's helped us build the strongest democracy, the greatest middle class, and the most powerful military the world has ever known. And today, there isn't a nation on earth that wouldn't gladly trade places with the United States of America. But our success is only possible because we've never treated those self-evident truths as self-executing. Generations of Americans have marched, organized, petitioned, fought, and even died to extend those rights to others, to widen the circle of opportunity for others, and to perfect this union we love so much. Oh, beautiful,
far heroes proved in.
The ZANU-PF Politburo has conferred national hero status on the late ruling party secretary for welfare of the disabled and disadvantaged persons, Stanley Sakupwanya, who died at Parire Nyato Hospital in Harare on Tuesday night. ZANU-PF spokesman Rugare Gumbo says it was easy for the Politburo to reach that decision, considering that Sakupwanya was a long-standing member of the Zimbabwe African People's Union, or ZAPU. Gumbo says Sakupwanya, who trained as a doctor in the Soviet Union and was in the armed liberation struggle of the 1970s based in Zambia and Uganda, contributed immensely to the liberation of Zimbabwe. His body was today taken to one commando barracks before it was ferried to his rural home in Rusape, where it will lie in state before being brought back to Harare Saturday for burial on Sunday at the National Heroes Acre. Sakupwanya was born in Bulawayo. He attended Mzilikazi's primary school and Moeng in Botswana, and then later joined the liberation struggle in 1963. He's survived by 11 children and 15 grandchildren. Rugare Gumbo speaks with Studio 7 reporter Jonga Kandemiri about Sakupwanya's life and burial.
This is the
That was ZANU-PF spokesman Rugare Gumbo speaking to Studio 7's Jonga Kandemiri from Harare.
This is Tatenda Gumbo, host of the Youth Forum. Make sure you join me this weekend as I feature Afrofusion artist Dumak.
Shout out to everyone listening. This is your boy Dumak, a.k.a. D-Boy, live from Zimbabwe.
Make sure you join me this Sunday, 7:20 on Studio 7.
Revelations by Information Minister Jonathan Moyo that his Information Media Panel of Inquiry gobbled $1.6 million at a time when media workers are going for months without pay have unruffled the feathers of some analysts. Moyo came under fire Wednesday after Flowery Buhera Member of Parliament Joseph Chinotimba of ZANU-PF accused the government of overspending on a few selected journalists led by former Daily News editor Geoff Nyarota while neglecting the plight of the general masses. Moyo, who was not in Parliament when the issue was raised, had the opportunity to respond on Thursday when he was grilled when he appeared before the Parliamentary Committee on Media, Information and Broadcasting Services. He told the committee that it was important for policymakers to know about issues affecting the media. The panelists, comprising of journalists and other personalities from the entertainment industry, draw a daily allowance of $300 each. We reached political analyst Nkululeko Sibanda, who says the panel appears to be a ploy by Information Minister Moyo to win over influential media personalities.
I think that is evident looking at the value of the money, $1.6 million, when many government departments and many government employees are going unpaid, or when their salaries are going in late, and when many are not working efficiently because they are underpaid, that there is a huge investment going on here. I suspect, and it is very clear to me, that this has to do with the factions within ZANU-PF and the leadership succession debate within ZANU, and that this is an attempt to reconfigure the various power pillars in the country. And the media is one of the most important, and I think it is being reconfigured towards one of the factions, and certainly the faction that Jonathan Moyo belongs to.
We understand that the panel will also be going out of the country to seek more information about media conditions of service. What do you make of this?
It is certainly clear to me that all this will be an attempt to romp in all or most of the journalists in the country, those that live in the country or those that are in neighboring countries, into a belief that the system was reforming itself and therefore that all the news in the future would be legitimate as it would come from the leading factions within ZANU-PF.
That was independent political analyst Nkululeko Sibanda speaking with Studio 7 from Britain. Put your flags up in the sky. Action resumed today, the FIFA 2014 World Cup, after a short break, with Germany winning 1-0 against France. Colombia, Netherlands, Costa Rica, Germany, France, Brazil, Argentina and Belgium are in the quarterfinals. Host Brazil will play Colombia later tonight, while on Saturday, Argentina will play Belgium and Netherlands battle it out with World Cup debutants Costa Rica for a place in the semifinals. VOA sports analyst Nico Pino spoke to Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye earlier on from Brazil.
Nico, we see that today is a very important day with the host Brazil playing Colombia. What is the mood like following this disaster that happened there?
Yeah, you know, people here, they have mixed feelings. Obviously, they want to celebrate and they hope that Brazil is going to qualify for the semifinal. But we have to be honest, the accident yesterday in Belo Horizonte was not a good news for Brazil. Two people have been killed in this accident with this overpass along the highway. And, you know, for many people, callers, especially in radio shows today in Brazil, there was a lot of criticism because a lot of infrastructure projects are running far behind schedule, well over budget, and they're often allegedly poorly executed. In Belo Horizonte, the celebration have been canceled until tomorrow, and we'll see what's going to happen next. But the mood is not celebrating in the city. But on the other side, you know, football is king here in Brazil, and everybody's going to be there, especially to see that Brazil might win something.
What about tomorrow's fixtures? We see the big guns like Argentina will be playing Belgium, and also in another match, Netherlands will face debutants Costa Rica. What can we expect from these two encounters?
I think everybody understands now that there's no small team, there's no little team that won't perform and they're going to receive like 5 or 7 goals. No, it's over. We're in 2014 and we saw with Costa Rica the surprise from this World Cup who eliminated England and Italy that it's going to be difficult. And obviously, Netherlands, they're favorite for this game. But look what happened against Mexico. Until 5 minutes before the end of the game, they were out of the tournament.
That was sports analyst Nico Pino speaking to Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye from Brazil. And remember, tonight at 8:30 p.m., we will be talking about the resumption of the 2014 World Cup Games in Brazil. That's what we had for you tonight. My name is Chris Gande. Good night. My apologies, Zimbabwe, but before I go, let me give you a quick recap of what we had for you in store tonight. Transparency International Zimbabwe has released a report that reveals the shocking levels of corruption in Zimbabwe, caused mostly by lack of transparency in land distribution. Zimbabweans in South Africa will have to return home eventually to process their work permits following fears by Pretoria that their continued stay in the country will result in unintended social and economic consequences. And some Harare residents urge Zimbabwe to urgently address